I just want to say thanks again to GrowthDay.com for sponsoring this podcast. GrowthDay is a number one self-improvement system. It has all the tools, motivational classes, and life coaching you need to fulfill your potential. If you love journaling, tracking your habits, setting goals, and learning from inspiring motivational speakers and wellness coaches, then you'll love GrowthDay. I teach on GrowthDay every month, and I love to see you on the app. Go to GrowthDay.com for a free trial. Join 300,000 people making self-improvement a way of life. Visit GrowthDay.com to start your new life with a free trial today. Hey, what up, y'all? Welcome back to the Trench Jumping Podcast. I have a special guest, and y'all know, man, when I do an interview, it's a real one. It's somebody that I truly respect, I truly admire. I'm super excited about this one. I'm excited to have this conversation. My bro, Matthew Hussey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. It's good to be with you, Trent.
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for giving your time. How's everything in your life going?
It's good. I thought a lot about your book in the last month. I'm out here talking about my book, and it's been a time where I've actually found it really hard to protect my peace. You know, what's funny is when I was writing this book, even though I thought that was the hard part, part of it was in some way it was peaceful because I was in my cave working away on this thing, and now I'm like you, I'm an introvert, Trent. Yeah. So the part of the process that involves me being out there all the time and having 100 messages on my phone a day from people on about interviews and stuff is like, it's not my natural state. So yeah, that's been a challenge. But other than that, I'm excited. I'm truly have never been more excited about a project than this one and people reading this, and excited to talk about it.
Before we get into it with Love Life, which is your new book, and man, I know it's going to serve my audience so well because I know a lot of them need what you have to offer, your expertise and your purpose, man. I love it. But before we get into that, I'm always selfishly curious about how the person or individual came into their purpose and came into their mission. And I'm sure there's a long story, but if you can shorten that up, because there's people listening, man, that have an idea of being what they're called to be, have an idea of starting the thing, but they're looking at their impossibilities. They're looking at their circumstances or situations, and they like to tell me and even us like, oh, that's easy for you to say. Yeah. Can you just kind of briefly discuss and talk about like the journey of becoming who you are today? I'm just curious.
So I'll tell it in a way that I think will really have value for the people who say those kinds of things, because I realized at a very young age that the kind of content that I still talk about to this day, you know, I work with people on relational intelligence and confidence, and I have always enjoyed psychology and practical psychology and understanding people better. I was reading these books when I was, the first book I read in this area, I was about 11 years old. I read How to Win Friends and Influence People. Yeah. And the only reason I came across that book is because it was on my dad's bookshelf. So I, from a very young age, I was really interested in this content. But the truth is, I was interested in it at an age where I had no business talking about it. And I had no business being taken seriously talking about it. It's not like I was going to be some 17-year-old coach who everyone was going to think, I must hear what this teenager has to say. But I really loved it for myself. It was, you know, like so many people, you discover your passion because you really enjoy it. It's working for you. There's something about it that speaks to your soul. And that was true for me at a very young age. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm a shy, introverted kid. And apparently there are things that I can learn that help me bring myself out of my shell a little more. There are things I can learn that make me have more impact in the world. And so when I started out, it was really about me, not about anyone else. But the more I immersed myself in it, the more I was like, man, I feel like I want this to be a part of my life and my career somehow. That would be the most amazing thing. But I had those same feelings of, what does that even look like? How do you do that? What, I'm too young to be taken seriously. I didn't come from a family that had a ton of financial resources or anything like that. It's not like I had connections. I didn't have any of that. But one of the things that I think at the time I practiced, although I never phrased it like this, was this idea that I've talked about my whole life since, which is stuff leads to stuff. And it's the least poetic line I've ever come up with. But I really in my bones believe that stuff leads to stuff. If you want more stuff in an area, do more stuff in that area. Mm. And it, for me, that involved me just looking for any crack in the door where I could go and like get involved. So I remember going as a teenager, I went to a free Dale Carnegie seminar in London. They had like a little franchise operating in London. And of course, Dale Carnegie's long since passed, but you know, they still have franchises. And I remember going to a free event in London. I could never go to any real, like to any of the main events because I didn't have money and I didn't have a credit card, but I would go to the free events and sit in the room and listen to the speakers. And I remember watching these speakers and thinking, I want to do what they're doing. I went and knocked on their door a couple of weeks later in London. I went and knocked on their actual offices and said, you know, can I speak to the managing director? And I remember this receptionist went and got the guy who was running this small operation. I was probably an office of like 5 or 6 people max, but he came out and he was like, can I help you, young man? And he brought me in and I said, well, I want to do this. And I feel like I could be a speaker for you. And I must've sounded ridiculous and naive, but he politely ushered me out of the office. Nothing. I can't tell you some great success story about that. I remember like saying to, he said, well, what do you want? And I said, well, I want to do this and I want to speak and I want to be, and he said, listen, you clearly are on a mission and you're a very ambitious young man. He said, look, you could be one of our speakers. It takes many years of training and you have to work your way up. And so he said, but I'm worried that we would just slow you down. And it was a very clever way of being like, no, thank you. But I'm going to encourage you on as I usher you to the door. And it was funny because at the time I didn't hear that I was being rejected. I just thought, oh, maybe they would slow me down. And I like started going off and looking for anyone who would listen to me. I would start university. People think I must have studied psychology or something like that. I went to university and studied real estate and planning because my dad was in real estate at the time and convinced me that that was maybe the path for me. And I thought maybe it was, but when I was at university, I would sit in my free time. I would sit in the dorms and talk to my closest friends about all this content I was learning about for myself. And some of them would get excited about it. And I realized, oh, I love talking about this. And I would just talk to them about it. And then, you know, I'd start making some YouTube videos and putting that out there and came back 6 months later and those got some views, which I was shocked at. Oh my God, people are actually watching these. People are watching me talk about this. And so it just like bit by bit, it started a journey. And I could tell you 100 different stories of little ways that I looked for the crack in the door and how that led to these little moments that led to more, like stuff leads to stuff. But that was kind of the messy story of me beginning. There was no big break. There was no moment where suddenly everything happened. It was just me. I'm a big believer, Trent, in this idea that if you have something that you really enjoy and you want to do more of that thing, you have to look for these strange little openings where you can just be in the room and be around people who are involved in that world somehow. Like get just get proximity to the thing that you love. You don't have to know what, where that's going to go or what it's going to mean or how you're going to get involved. Just get in the vicinity of the thing that you love and enjoy. And it is crazy when you show up with enthusiasm and humility and with a desire to just be helpful. It's crazy what kind of things can happen.
Man, I love that. Like, say that a quote again. Is doing stuff leads to stuff. Say it again.
Stuff leads to stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so true because I often say, like, just go find out. And I tell people that because they ask, like, how do I just go find out? Like, put yourself in the room. And the beautiful thing that I love about what you shared is that people are getting to understand that it's not about the how. And I think so many people are paralyzed when they start. It's like, okay, how do I? And like you said, man, just put yourself around proximity. Get yourself in the room, get around people, because I do believe like there's a plan for your life that like you really can't plan, right? There's something that goes beyond even your greatest plans, even your structure, your routine, that just happens. And when you put yourself in the environments of the things that just happen, like our relationship, right? We couldn't have planned this. We were in the same room at some point. So right. I love that, bro. And I appreciate you for sharing that. So you have an amazing book. That is called Love Life. And I'm just curious right quick, like I haven't read it yet and I can't wait to read it. And I'm curious, like the title, what is the title? Like, what does that mean? Love life. Is it, you know, loving your life? Is it about relationships? Like, what does it mean?
So I was, you know, I've been working with people in their love lives for 17 years of my life now. And I became known as, you know, the guy that helps you find love. But I wanted to write a book that on a deeper level, yes, was a co-pilot for anyone who is looking to find love. So for anyone out there who wants to find their person, this book is going to help you do that way, way faster. But I also wanted to acknowledge that there are three relationships that determine the quality of our life. There's our relationship with other people, our relationship with ourselves, and our relationship with life itself. And this book aims to help you with all three of those relationships, not just your ability to find this person that you can share your life with, your ability to have a great relationship with life, and your ability to have a great relationship with yourself are also going to expedite the process of you finding the love you want. Because the truth is, when you're in a bad relationship with life, when you're in a bad relationship with yourself, that's when you're looking for someone to come along and save you from those things. You're looking for a life raft because you're like, I don't like my life. And I certainly don't like my own company. So I just need someone to save me from those two things. Pull me into a better life and take me out of my own company. And when that's your desire, you will settle for anything that presents itself as an opportunity in your love life. You won't pay attention to whether it makes you happy. You won't pay attention to whether it brings you peace. You won't pay attention to whether this person treats you well. You're just happy that there's this possibility that someone is going to take you out of your relationship with yourself and your relationship with life. And on the flip side, when you're, I don't like to say happy because I find happy to be intimidating as a concept for a lot of us, especially when you're in tough times. Like I've been in some dark, dark times in my life where I really hit a point where I was, I didn't know exactly how I was going to come through it. And if someone had come along in those moments and tried to tell me how to be happy, I would have wanted to punch them in the face. Like it was happiness was unrelatable to me in my dark times. You talk to someone who's going through heartbreak about happiness, they're completely unrelated. They can't relate to it. They're like, I'm just trying to get through the day, let alone be happy. So what I prefer as a phrase is happy enough. Like I write a chapter in this book, it titled Happy Enough. Because what I believe is happy enough is achievable. And when I was in my worst times, I fought for happy enough. And happy enough wasn't some consolation prize. Happy enough wasn't a way of being passive or settling. Happy enough was this hard-won state that I was able to arrive at, where it became like a superpower. Because when you're happy enough in your life, or when you're happy enough with yourself, then you have the power to say no. Someone, you may, by the way, you may be happy enough, Trent, and still acknowledge that if I met the love of my life, I'd be even happier. You, right. You can acknowledge that. You don't have to pretend that, no, I'm just as happy either way, whether I find love or not. You can admit, man, finding love might make me happier. But if I'm happy enough, I can hold. And the power is in the ability to hold. Because if someone comes along who's going to disturb your peace, disrespect you, treat you badly, treat you like an option instead of the person that they're choosing, you can say, no, thank you. But if you're not happy enough and someone comes through and that person feels like a lifeline, all of a sudden you'll start saying yes to things that can destroy your life. And I have seen this over and over again in my life, is people in relationships with destructive people, people who stay in relationships with narcissistic people, and they stay in these relationships for years or even decades. Some people die in those relationships, Trent, having never found peace and never found true joy or happiness. And as much as I tried to tell people, you know, I'm not just the person who helps people find love. I'm the person who helps you free yourself from toxic love or from the wrong kind of love. I'm just as happy for the people that come up to me and tell me that they broke up with someone because of me, as I am for the people that come up to me and tell me I found the love of my life because of you. So that's how I think about it. And that's why I called it Love Life, because it's bigger than finding love.
I got a question for you, Matthew, because I was thinking, like, I have a few questions. So when you say happy enough, right? And I love that, because what that shows me internally that, you know, I still have a chance, right? I don't have to give up. And most people, when they're not happy enough, they'll give up or they'll settle. But I was thinking about this on the flip side, because this is the one thing that I've heard a lot. And with people who settle, I always say settling leads to suffering. And I've heard this, and I've been guilty of this, like in my earlier 20s, in my teenage years, even if I've been in like my high school relationship wasn't a good relationship, but I was like, at least I have one. And I've heard people say that settling relationships that they know aren't good for them is like, well, you know, a little is better than nothing. Like, at least I have a little bit. At least I got a little bit of love. At least I got a little bit of intimacy, even though it's not what I want. And I would think that, what if they're saying, man, well, at least I'm happy enough in this. And I know what you're saying is a different perspective. But in that perspective, like, to somebody would say, well, I'm happy enough in this relationship. And that could be a good thing, too, because you can grow. I'm just like, what's your perspective towards that?
Yeah, it's a very nuanced thing. It's a great, great question. Look, I think there's a big difference between happy enough and comfortable enough. Comfortable is dangerous, because what we're comfortable with can be hell. Like some people are, we tend to gravitate in life not towards what's going to make us happy, but what is familiar. And what is familiar can be terrible. We can gravitate towards an abusive relationship because it's familiar. We can gravitate towards a schedule of work that leads to constant burnout, because for us, being near burnout all the time is what's familiar. And so we have to separate what's comfortable and what's familiar from what I define as happy enough. You know, settling is an interesting word, because it becomes negative or positive depending on the context you're using it in.
Thanks.
If you say settling for someone, that's negative. Because when I hear settling for someone, I hear I'm shortchanging myself.
Yeah.
I could do better. I could have a better relationship. I could have something more rewarding. I could have something more fulfilling, but I'm settling for this relationship. But let me change the language even slightly from settling for to settling on.
Mm.
Now, when you hear settle on, that implies something completely different. If I settle on something, I resolve to choose this thing, to not live in indecision, and then to really make that thing as great as I can make it. You know, at a certain point, people traveling from east to west in early America, they had to decide, at what point do I settle on this land? Do I settle in Chicago? Do I settle in Montana? Do I settle in California? Like, what land do I settle on? Now, by the way, all great places.
Yeah.
Right? There's no bad place in that list. But which one do I settle on? And when I settle on a piece of land, I go, now I'm going to build the best possible house I can build on this land.
Wow.
And what ends up determining how great that experience is of where you live is, do I invest time and energy in making my life here great? And a lot of people never get to great because they never settle on anything for long enough. You know this, Trent, with That's careers. Right. There's no perfect career. People are looking for their dream career on day one as if a dream career just presents itself. It doesn't. Even in a career that is interesting to you, you have to spend years sculpting that career into something that is more and more your dream career. You and I have both, in our years doing this, we've both tried things or done things within this career that we didn't enjoy as much as others. You tried it. You were like, that's not it. I don't enjoy that as much. You know, it could be anything. It could be, I try touring. I'm not so sure. I thought I'd enjoy touring. Actually, I like doing this instead. I one-on-one coaching. I thought I'd enjoy one-on-one coaching, but actually what I really enjoy is coaching groups or coaching. Like you try things and you learn, that's not it. But you stick with the path because the path is right. Well, the path has like in it the makings of what you want it to be, but the way of practicing that path changes over time because you sculpt your dream career. And I really believe that great relationships, they're not found, they're built, but you find someone where you two have the right raw materials to make something great together. Mm. But the only way it becomes great is by settling on that person. And I think that a lot of us apply this optimization style paradigm to our love lives that is dangerous, because if you're constantly trying to optimize the person and your choice, then you never really settle on anyone. And you're constantly telling yourself, well, I maybe if I left this person and went to this person, I'd get a little bit more of this thing. But you'd also get a whole new bag of things that you have to deal with this new person that would be new challenges that the old person didn't have. You can't optimize for people in that same way. I think you find someone with the raw materials to build something great, and then you build something great with that person. So that's what I mean when I talk about, like, I use happy enough in different contexts. If you're single, happy enough is, you know what, my life right now is actually, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Do I want to find love? Yes. I want to find love. Am I open to finding love? Yes. Am I going to do things in pursuit of finding love? Yes. But I'm also okay. Okay doesn't mean I'm going to be passive. Okay means I can go out there and I can take big swings to find love. I can go out there and ask someone out and get rejected, because at the end of the day, I'm still coming home to me and I like that home. The same is true, you know, in a relationship. You can be happy enough in a relationship where you say, people who are not happy enough, by the way, in relationships, let's look at what the opposite of that is. The opposite is never enough. And people who have the never enough mindset in relationships, they're miserable so long as someone who's better looking than their partner could walk into a room. They're miserable so long as there's something that they could be getting in a different relationship that they're not getting in their current relationship. But that's always going to be true. That's always going to be true. There's always going to be someone who looks different or has something that your partner doesn't, or has this amazing thing in a different way. That's always going to be true. Just as if you have a business, it's always going to be true that there's more money on the table. But at a certain point, you have to say, do I want to be one of life's never enough people? Are they happy? Like, can I point to them as a model for happiness? Everyone I know who lives in a state of never enough is chronically unhappy. So happy enough isn't settling for. Happy enough is settling on. And I believe when you settle on something, that's the only true route to creating greatness in anything you do.
Wow. That, man, I'm going to let that breathe. I always give time to let that breathe to the listener, because that's so powerful. I mean, even what you just said of, you know, I think a lot of times we associate growth with never enough. Like, oh, if we're not growing, if we're not going to get more all the time. And that's not the case all the time. Like, you can have enough, right? And this could be good and we can build from that. Man, that's so powerful. I want to ask you this, because I know a lot of people struggle with this. And you talked about it briefly a little while ago about, you know, going back to what's familiar. You know, I always say, like, we would choose a familiar pain rather than go seek an unknown peace in our life, because it's what's familiar. We know what we're going to get. Even though if it sucks, it's terrible, at least we know what we're going to get, because we're so afraid as humans of the unknown. So the question I want to ask you and have a conversation about, Matt, is like, how do we prevent ourselves from going back to what's not good for us, right? Because even I tell people, hey, stop going back to what's good for you. It's easy to say it, but it's hard to apply it. Whether that's a relationship, whether that is a business, whether that is a time or environment in your life that didn't serve your life, like, what's some practical things that you would tell people that could help them not go back to the things they know is not good for them?
So I think we tend to fail ourselves when we're not honest with ourselves about how unhappy we are right now. So I know, the unhappiest relationships of my life, I didn't necessarily tell myself how unhappy I was at the time. Like, I lied to myself about how unhappy I was, because I really wanted to hold on to that person. I was afraid to lose them. You know, I wanted to justify how much I'd already invested in them, but I didn't get honest with myself about how unhappy I was. And I think a lot of people are not good at tuning into their real feelings about how someone makes them feel. Like, I always tell people, we're very good at focusing on how we feel about someone. Mm-hmm. We're much less used to focusing on how someone makes us feel. Big difference, right? You are, when you ask someone, why do you, you know, someone says, oh, that person never called me back. I'll say, well, what is it about this person? They'll go, oh, well, they're this and they're this and they're this, and they're amazing in this way and they're amazing in that way. And they'll say all these things that are about how they feel about a person. But at no point do they talk about how this person makes them feel. And if they were honest with how this person makes them feel, it would be terrible. Because right now, the reason we're even having this conversation is because this person is making you feel rejected and worthless and anxious and completely unsure of whether this person likes you or not. That's how they make you feel. So, and how someone makes you feel has the is what has the bearing on your happiness, not how you feel about them. How you feel about them is like just a form of worship, right? But how they make you feel, that's the relationship. So that's a really important place to start if you're with someone right now who, or you keep seeing someone who consistently isn't giving you what you want or isn't meeting your needs. Get honest with how this is actually making you feel instead of focusing on how you feel about them. When someone is in the past, it's really important to connect to how painful something was. Yeah. Because we tend to have a poor memory for pain. I'm convinced it's why people to choose. It's why I chose to write a second book.
Right.
You know, like my last book was 10 years ago. That was far enough away that I'd forgotten the pain. And that happens with relationships too. Is, you know, we can finally leave something with someone who's bad for us because it reached a threshold of pain.
Yeah.
It was like, we were so unhappy. Maybe they cheated on us. Maybe they betrayed us. Maybe we found out some horrific things. Maybe they brought chaos to our life. Maybe just it got so bad that we finally said, I can't do this anymore. And we left. But then we're single again. And over time, what becomes more real to us than the pain of that relationship is the pain of loneliness. The pain of wanting to find love and not finding it. And the pain of what the wrong person can do to us starts to become more distant. And when the scales start tipping in that direction, we're liable to start saying yes to things again that back then we would have said never again. And now all of a sudden, here we are saying yes again. So staying connected to how painful something was in the past is actually very important. We think we should move on from the pain, and we should in terms of our healing, but we should never forget the pain, because that pain is what's going to keep you alive. That pain, or understanding what that pain was, is going to be a manual for how you make decisions in the future. Necessity, people talk a lot about how we need to become more confident to make better decisions, value yourself more. And that's not untrue. But in the beginning, you don't need confidence to make a better decision. You need necessity. I can never go back to that. I can never be in that position again. If I was in a relationship where I thought the person was awesome and I was anxious constantly because I didn't feel loved, because I didn't feel accepted, because I didn't feel that person's presence, because I didn't feel secure in that relationship. I didn't feel safe. And when that was the case, I was truly miserable. And when you realize, oh my God, doesn't matter how awesome I think someone is, if I don't have those fundamental things like safety, consistency, acceptance, you know, feeling that person's love, then it doesn't matter how badly I want a person. I'm miserable. And when you realize that's true, the next time around, when someone presents as sexy, charismatic, super attractive, the package that you think you want, you realize all of those things are absolutely worthless if I don't feel the things that I was missing last time. If I don't get them this time, it doesn't matter how great someone appears to be, they're not worth having. And that's a very powerful place to operate from, because then no matter how attractive you think someone is, when they start showing up inconsistently, when you had a great date with them, but they didn't text you for 2 weeks afterwards, and then they suddenly ask you out again, you don't think, how awesome they asked me out again. You think, yeah, we had an amazing date. I felt crazy attraction for this person, but this person's actually presenting as unhappiness right now. The one thing I know I need in my life is consistency. My past has proven that. And I'm not getting consistency from this person right now. In fact, I'm constantly second guessing whether they like me because of how hot and cold they are. So you start to become less interested in that person, no matter how great the date was. You start to devalue them in your life because you're like, this isn't it. Doesn't matter how attractive I thought they were on that date. This isn't it. That's how you start to make better decisions. But you have to stay connected to how much pain it brought you last time around when someone was inconsistent. That's the key.
Man, that's so powerful. We're getting a masterclass here today. And I want to ask you this because as you was talking about that, this popped up into my mind. Like when you said like even the last relationship didn't give me consistency, and that's kind of what I'm looking for. What would you say to the people who play on that? And what I like to say is like sometimes when you open up, right, and you know, say it could be business and say, man, my last business partners, they weren't right with the numbers or they weren't transparent, et cetera. And I always say that when people want access to your life, and like people should secure insecurities, but some people do it in a negative way where they see the weaknesses that you have or the insecurities that you have or the questions mm-hmm. that you have. And if I want to gain your trust or if I want to be in your life, I'm going to make sure that I do that. So it's like, oh, this person never called me back, you know, or never called me at night or whatever. I'm going to make sure I do that. So how do people identify in a way like when it's something that's real, when they really care versus somebody that heard all your pain, all your stories, all your insecurities. And so they're saying, okay, I'm going to make sure I do these things so they can put me in the good guy boat or the good girl boat, or this person's a great person. What would you advise in those situations?
Character is consistent.
Mm.
Character is consistent. And no matter how much someone spots ways that they could endear you to them or endear themselves to you how much they pick up on the things that will seduce you early on in business or in relationships, you will always see cracks in the character if that stuff is not authentic and if it's not coming from a place of who they are.
Yeah.
There's a difference between tactics and standards.
Mm.
If someone's employing a tactic to get you to like them, it will work for a minute.
That's right.
But if it's not their standard for who they are, like if they're being generous right now to get in your good books, but generosity isn't part of their nature or their value system, then you'll start to notice that it's inconsistent because a tactic is something I only do when I get what I want. It's not who I am when I'm not getting what I want.
Whew.
Whereas standards, your character, that's who you are. And it's consistent. You're not an unkind person just because you're in a situation where someone's not giving you what you want. That's just who you are. So character is consistent and you have to watch for the inconsistencies. Now, here's the really important part. We have to resist the urge to make up our minds about everybody in the first 5 minutes. Who someone is in a job interview, who someone is on a first date, is not a measure of their character, it is a measure of their impact.
Mm.
And a lot of the time when someone is saying to me, Matt, you don't understand, we had the most amazing date, it was incredible, I've never felt this way. What I want to tell them is, what you're telling me is about the impact this person had on you. You're not telling me about their character because there's no way you can know their character.
Wow.
You can't know. And I think that we all have a little bit of, I want to say, I feel like a lot of us have an inbuilt arrogance about how great of a judge of people's character we are. Like we all want to believe like I'm a great judge of character. But the truth is, if you've ever run a business, it humbles you real quick when you think that someone was going to be amazing and you hired them because you had the best feeling about them. And 3 months later, you're like, this person is useless. Like, I thought this person was going to be amazing. And this person's like, man, they did a number on me in that interview because they're not great. And they're not nearly as like loyal as I thought. They're not nearly as consistent as I thought. They're not as capable as they made themselves out to be. Like, you realize how wrong you can get it. And that doesn't mean you're a bad judge of character. It just means we have to be humble about how many things we can miss early on. Especially, by the way, Trent, with people who are really great at creating an impression.
Yeah.
There are people who, like, narcissists give the best first impressions. They're amazing at it. They know how to give you an amazing experience. They know when they're being very intentional about seducing you, they know how to be a perfect listener. They know how to ask you the best questions and make you feel heard and make you feel special. They're not just people who are really good at this don't just walk into a room and talk all about themselves and show how wonderful they are. And you kind of walk away going, well, they were very charming, but man, they were all about them. No, people who are really good at it, they know how to make it all about you.
That's right.
And so we have to just, that doesn't mean we go in cynical. It doesn't mean we go in as a pessimist looking for what's wrong with everybody all the time. It means having a little bit more of an attitude of, we'll see. I'm a big fan of the phrase, we'll see.
I like that.
Because it allows you not to be a pessimist about someone, but it also allows you not to get carried away. You can say, I had an amazing time with that person. I had an amazing conversation with that person. Oof, that was a great date. But when your friends say to you, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, what do you think? Where could this go? You go, we'll see. We'll see. Because the truth is, I have no idea who this person is. Trent, I can't even rely on my own instincts when it comes to friendships. I've met people who on the day I met them, I came away feeling like I've literally left a meeting another dude and gone back to my wife and been like, this guy's amazing. I love him. Oh man, we're going to be friends. And 6 months later, I'm like, I don't even like this person very much. I realized there was so much superficial charm going on that I mistook for a genuine connection with me. But really, it was just, this person's really good at doing that with everybody. So it wasn't a sign that we were going to become the best of friends. It was just a sign of their impact. So we just have to remember these things going in. And what it means is you can only, because character is consistent and consistency is only something you can measure over time, in order to see what something really is, you need to give it time. So enter in an organic way. And at no stage should you give more than you're prepared to lose if you're wrong about this person's character.
Ah, that's so good, man. Character is consistent. One of the things that you're speaking my language. You know, one of the things that I always tell people, and I had to learn this the hard way, because as you said, like, I've realized, like, over the years, like, I'm not a good judgment of character as I thought, especially until I started learning and having these certain principles and standards on that really guides my life. But I always tell people, man, you know, you can't judge people by the presentation, right? The presentation is always going to be perfect when somebody wants access to your life. You can't judge it by the promises, and you can't judge it by the perfection. I think a lot of us, we fall for that. But as you said, like, true colors will get revealed over mm-hmm. time. And one of the things that I do, Matt, is I love to look at a person's character that has nothing to do with me. So I like to look at a person's character, how they treat other people, how they are with their family, mm-hmm. how they are with their spouse, how they are with the people who can't do anything for them, the valet guy. Yep. And so I look at those things because, as you said, you can be giving me the perfect presentation because you want something from my life. But how do you treat the people who can do anything for you? Because character is consistent. We got to wrap up this episode really quick, but selfishly, I have a question that I really want to ask you. And then I have a last question that I want to ask you. The selfish question I want to ask you, because I know I struggle with this. I struggle with this in so many areas of my life. I know a lot of people in our position struggle with this. And I'm just curious, how do you, if you do, separate coach from husband, or, you know, coach from friend? Because, for example, I'll even, Maria, right? It's so funny at times when I'll put myself in a position as coach when she needs husband, right? She doesn't need coach all the time. Or my kids, like, they need dad, not coach. And I struggle with that because it's just naturally who I am, right? I want to be able to get to the solution as a man. I want to be able to fix things if I can. So, like, is that a struggle with you? Have you dealt with that? Like, what's your advice when it comes to that?
Yeah, I less so with friends, because actually I don't jump into unsolicited advice with people in my life generally. I'm more like, in a way, I'm kind of like, I'm off work. So I, you know, I'm happy to just have a human conversation with anybody. But in my house, or in our house together, if Audrey starts talking to me about something from work, I'll jump straight into, you know, well, look, here's the thing. You need to talk to that person, you know, like, right. She's like, talking. I'm like, well, you need to go and have a conversation with that person. And she's like, immediately just had enough of me, because it's not what she wanted. And I think the thing that's helped me is understanding that great communication is about outcome. What's the outcome I want? And you can apply this in all directions in life. If there's someone you want to confront about something, you may want to confront them in a way that tears their head off, but you have to ask yourself, what's the outcome I actually want here? Mm-hmm. If I'm really angry with this person, or if I feel disrespected by this person or whatever, but I need them to, let's say I need them to finish this job, then I need to know my outcome before I go in, because I might hurt myself with the way that I go in. This person might decide to never speak to me again. And now I can't, the thing I really need, which is for them to finish this thing out, I can't get done. So I think outcome is really important. With my wife, the outcome is, well, I want her to feel better.
Yeah.
And if the outcome is I want her to feel better, what's the fastest route there? Okay, well, it's actually that I shut up right now and I just listen to what she's saying. And I've learned that, you know, that, as I'm sure at times it's been for you, that's really alien for me to be absolutely. Like, let's not talk about what to do next. Let's just talk about this and let's complain about it. Like that's so alien to me. But when I learned, oh, that's actually the fastest route to her feeling better right now, is just feeling like that's good. She's got someone who gets it and gets that how annoying it is what she's dealing with. And that's actually going to make her feel better 10 times faster than me taking this complete detour around what I think is going to be helpful, until the point where we end up fighting now, because she's like, you don't get it. And then I have to end up coming all the way back around again to, you're right, that is really annoying. And she's like, thank you, finally. Yes, it is annoying. Like, it, instead of taking the detour, I'm like, if the outcome I want is her feeling better, then I'll just take the shortcut, which is stand on the same side of the table as her and point at the thing she's annoyed at and be like, that is annoying. You're right. If the outcome is, let's say the outcome isn't, I want her to feel better. The outcome is, I want her to fix this problem because I don't want it to continue to be a problem for her. Well, even if that's my outcome, the quickest road there is still for me to come to this side of the table, stand next to her, point at the thing and say, man, that is really annoying, isn't it? She says, yes, it is. You're right. And then when her nervous system is regulated and she feels in a better place going, hey, I had an idea about that thing. You know, like, what if you tried this? You know, from that state, she's got the lens where she'll actually appreciate that and be like, you know, I appreciate you being a teammate and trying to figure this out with me. But still the fastest route there is for me to do that first. So I think it's almost the short answer for this probably from me, Trent, would have been, we can either focus on having the conversation in a way that feeds our ego, or we can communicate in a way that gets us to the outcome we want. And I think too often we're coming from what feeds our ego, not what gets us to the outcome and what's most effective. If we want to, and us guys, we're really good at saying, no, we just want to do what's effective. Yeah. And that's why we give a solution in the first place, right? That's it's because right. I'm trying to, but actually it's realizing, no, by doing it this way, we're being incredibly ineffective and beating our head against the wall instead of doing the thing that is really most effective, which in this particular case turns out to be empathy and understanding.
Man, that is communication, connection, mastery 101. You know, and I'm going to have that in my heart, man, thinking about that in situations of my life. Like, how can I, what's the fast way to make this person feel better? Because it's right. Like you said, I mean, regardless, it starts where they're standing on the same side of the table. And I love that. I know we're out of time, so I want
to. You can ask me one more if you need to. You can ask me one more.
Okay, cool, for sure. So I want to ask you just a brief question just about love life, and, you know, what's your hope that people receive from it, why people need to get it, and then I'll ask my final question for you.
Yeah. Well, this book is designed to be a co-pilot for anyone who is looking to find love. And anyone who's looking to do love better, whatever stage of their life they're in. It's called Love Life, How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What. And it's designed for people every stage. You know, you could be someone who is in their 30s and you really want to meet someone to have a family with, and you're starting to get really afraid that it's never going to happen for you. You could be in your 50s and you're past all that, or your 60s and you're like, I want companionship. I want to find someone to live my life with. Or you could be trying to heal from lost love, trying to get over heartbreak. It doesn't matter where you're at right now. This book is designed to meet you there. And it's not just designed to help you find the love you want much faster. It's also designed to help you find a completely different relationship with yourself along the way, and a different relationship with life, and to get to, as we discussed, happy enough, even in the times where life isn't giving you the thing that you want yet. I think life is short. We can't defer our happiness to a time when we've suddenly found our person and we're in that contented relationship. I think that we have to be able to source our happy enough now, and when we can do that, it also changes the game on our ability to go out there and be brave and be proactive and take risks in love. And as I said, say no to the wrong things. So I think it's the best thing I've ever written. I'm very proud of it. I've worked on it for 4 years and I think it's going to help a lot of people. So if you want the book, there's a link. It's lovelifebook.com. You can get it from any retailer you want on that site. But what's cool about going to that site is I have an event on May the 4th called Find Your Person, which is designed to take all of the ideas and the concepts from the book and bring them to life in a practical way in your life to help you find your person over the course of the next year. So, and of course, you can never guarantee that, but you can set yourself up for massive success by creating the right conditions. And that's what we're going to do at that event. So everyone who gets the book gets a free ticket to the event. And you can find out all about that at lovelifebook.com.
I think they know, rehabbers across the world, I think y'all know that everybody needs this book. So let's go support Matthew, man. Gift it, you know, share it. As you heard in this podcast, like, the information is phenomenal. I mean, with under an hour, I mean, I've learned so much. Literally gave us a masterclass. So make sure you go get Love Life right now. Let's take it to the best book in the world, because if that happens, a lot of lives are going to be helped. A lot of lives are going to be changed. Matthew, as we wrap today up, I want to say I appreciate you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your energy, bro. Today's been amazing, not just for the listeners, but also for me. But I want to ask you this question, and I'm going to put a time limit on you. 30 seconds or less, if you can. There's somebody out there right now listening to this episode, and they're in a terrible situation in their life. They feel like they can't change their situation, but they know they need to change their situation. They feel stuck. They feel like they can't move on, but they know they need to move on to change their life. What do you tell that person?
Well, firstly, everything changes. Nothing stays the same. Everything changes. Even in the worst pain of your life, if you're at a 10 on the pain scale, I promise you there'll be a day where you're at a 7 or a 6 or a 4. And the difference between a 10 and even a 7 is massive, because what you can do to be proactive at a 7 is completely different than what you can do when you're at a 10 and you feel like you can't get out of bed. So don't measure the quality of your whole life by the peak of your pain in your worst moments, because everything changes. And also know that the peak of this pain and the resourcefulness that you'll have to discover in yourself to get through this actually might end up being the thing that you are most grateful for in your life. I've had plenty of pain. We choose pain all the time, right? We choose to go to the gym. We choose to do difficult work projects. Some people choose to climb literal mountains. Like, people choose pain in life proactively all the time because it gives them benefits to do so. Well, I would argue the pain in my life that I didn't choose has been just as beneficial to me as the pain I did choose. In fact, I would go one step further and say the pain I didn't choose was usually more beneficial, because how deep I had to dig to get through the pain that came to me instead of me going to it was much deeper. And the gifts that I got from having to dig that deep to get through my pain, they are the things that I believe define me today. They're the things when I think of my character today and what I have to offer the world today, the greatest things I have to offer the world are a direct result of the most painful moments in my life. So right now, the pain you're in, if it's the worst pain of your life, connect with the fact that this will at some point likely be the thing you are most grateful for in what you're able to give. So everything changes, and know that what you'll have to do to get through this pain may end up being the thing you end up loving or liking about yourself the most.
Matthew Hussey, man, there you have it. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. Love Life. You guys go get it. You guys take this man across the world, because the world needs you, bro. And I really appreciate you. And thank you, bro. As we say at the end of every single episode, it all starts with you. You guys, make sure you follow Matthew. Make sure you share this with somebody you care about and love, because somebody in your life needs it. It's rehab time. Let's get it.
Hey, what up, y'all? It's that time of the year. Everybody's talking about forming new and healthier habits. Change your habits, change your life, right? Listen, I love it. I'm sure you started some new habits this year. I know I did. But the question is, how are you tracking those habits? Have you ever wondered, like, which habits matter most? Which habits are you tracking daily, weekly, monthly? A lot of people know they need to improve their habits, but let's be real, they don't know where to start. That's why I think you'll love Growth Day, the world's number one, I didn't say two, three, four, number one self-improvement system. Growth Day, what it does is it helps you track proven habits that lead to long-term success, not that short stuff, long-term lasting change, well-being, and positive relationships. And check this out. You can get a free trial right now at growthday.com. What you measure, you can change. The reason people love Growth Day is that you can score your habits every day, week, month. And when you do, you get targeted classes to improve those habits. When you sign up today, you also get Growth Day's mindset journal, wellness challenges, and in-depth personal development courses from the industry's biggest names. And don't forget, I teach live every single month in Growth Day too. You got that right. Yes, every single month I teach a new personal growth topic to help you advance your life. Download Growth Day from the App Store on your phone or start your free trial right now at growthday.com. Let's get it. Hey you, I got a question for you. Are you trying to build your community online this year? If not, you should. Without 3 hours across the world, there would be no trend show in the rehab time. Everyone in business is talking about the power of community, because when you get community right, not only does your audience grow faster, but so does your sales. But where is everyone managing their communities these days? A lot of online entrepreneurs and thought leaders are turning to Circle.so. Circle is an all-in-one community platform. It lets you host content, create discussions, live streams, group chats, memberships, all under your own brand. And what's cool about Circle.so is that you don't even need a website or a Facebook group. Instead, Circle lets you build your own community site where you can host content and manage your members. You can even create locked or unlocked content spaces, groups, and classes. You can put your content behind a paywall too, and you can charge different amounts of money for different spaces on your community site. Circle.so is famously easy to use, and it has its 14-day trial free just for you. Go to circle.so. Imagine being able to manage your community, start chat groups and live classes, accept payments, all in one place. If this is the year to capture, organize, and monetize your community, head over to circle.so. You can get a free trial and start building your online community right now. Just go to circle.so. Let's get it.